Welcome back to the Pistols Firing Podcast. Kyle Porter here. Carson Cunningham joined us earlier, but he had to run. We had a few timing issues today, but we actually recorded two podcasts, one with me and him, episode 126, which we posted earlier, and then this one with Doug Gottlieb, who we had on three times last year. Obviously, he is very interested in the new head coaching job that just became available in Stillwater, Oklahoma, and we talked to him about that, and we tried to ask him questions about just kind of the specifics of what he would do in Stillwater and with the Oklahoma State program. Thought he gave a good answers, at the very least interesting answers, and he has a real plan, it seems like. And, you know, Carson and I have talked about this at length on multiple podcasts, so there's no need to dive back into it right here. But hope you guys enjoy the Gottlieb interview. We have... it's a crazy time, but we've enjoyed covering it, and it's been a lot of fun, and we will continue to push this thing forward. It's time for the Coop Ale Works guest of the week. Big guest today, Carson. Coop Ale Works, brewing great tasting craft beer in Oklahoma City. Try the flagship F5 IPA, the bold DNR Belgian Strong Ale, or the refreshing Horny Toad Blonde. For your next watch party, tailgate, or get together with friends, enjoy a cold Coop Ale Works, and please remember to drink responsibly. Carson, we're going to call somebody I believe could be the next head basketball coach at Oklahoma State.
Like I said, deja vu all over again. We did two or three podcasts with Doug Gottlieb last season when I believe he was in the running for the job. Timing could be even better this year, Kyle. But let's talk to Doug, and I think we need to get into more of his philosophy coaching-wise. I think it's amazing to me, Kyle. People are either all in on Doug or all out, yep. And there's vitriol every time you mention his name. So yeah. It's going to be interesting to see, hear his thoughts on his plan.
Yep.
Welcome back to the Pistols Firing Podcast. I'm Carson Cunningham, joined by Kyle Porter, and it's deja vu all over again. We had Doug Gottlieb on our podcast last year this time. The Oklahoma State job's back open, and Doug, I assume you want the job. I talked to you on Sunday for Channel 5. We talked a lot about it. Do you think the timing is right this time around?
If the timing isn't right now, when is it right?
Yep.
Yeah. Right? I mean,
I agree, yeah.
I mean, timing isn't right now. When is it right? So, I think it's perfect time for me personally. I know that's selfish, but it is perfect time for me. As I'm leaving CBS, and at the time this will be published, everybody will know. And I do have another job lined up, and I'm not at liberty because that's supposed to be announced later in the week. So we'd be in transition anyway. And then you factor in the, frankly, disloyalty that Brad Underwood, I thought, showed to the program and to the school. And, like, look, everybody has their reasons, and I'm sure his reasons are valid and legitimate by his own sense. I don't agree with, trying to burn the thing down when you walk out. I've never done that with either of the two places that I've left, but that is his choice to do so. For me, it's a great opportunity because I think the pride in the program was reinvigorated. It showed what an outsider who has some loose ties can do. Imagine, if you will, what I could do with some of the momentum that was created. And we used that momentum, and we used the brand of loyal and true, and we build on what I thought was an outstanding turnaround season. It wasn't the greatest year in the history of Cowboy basketball. Losing the last four games hurt because you lost pretty all four of those games. But I do think it was a good year and a really good turnaround year, and you capitalize on the momentum if I get a chance to come in there, as opposed to somebody else where you run the risk of blowing the whole thing up and starting all over again.
Doug, I'm curious. We've everybody has talked a lot about the no experience thing or whatever. I think Carson and I are way past that. But I'm curious about what you think you would be your best attribute as a coach. You would do as well or better than any other coach in the country.
I am really good at drawing up a play. I've seen a million of them. I know how to find the mismatch, what the action we are looking for, and I believe I know how to coach it within my team to which we can go through them enough at the right times to which, you know, at the end of game when you need a bucket, we can get a bucket or we can get a good look. I mean, you can't control as a coach if the ball goes in and the ball doesn't go in. But I do think that you can have some specials. You can call a timeout and things are hairy and draw something up. And if you have if you're able to get the type of kids who can absorb things and change things on the fly, I've always been able as a point guard and in any time I've coached basketball to see things that some other people missed. I mean, you know, like, look, I told you guys last year, Coach Sutton used to give me the pen at halftime. And because I'd see things and I can see it. So I actually think that would be a strength, not a weakness. It's just really hard to tell somebody who hadn't played with me, who hadn't been in the locker room, who hasn't, you know, who hasn't been on any of these teams with me, that that's the case.
Yeah.
So I also think that, you know, it goes without saying that I'm a name. I'm not just a name in Stillwater. I'm a name in recruiting.
Yeah.
And there'd be a looky here factor. But I don't have to introduce myself when I walk into a gym. Every kid knows me and all the coaches know my dad and my brother as well as me, you know? And so, whereas if you hire a coach from a small school or from any school, really, you know, unless they're from the area, they have to introduce themselves to everybody in the area. And then they have to create a relationship in recruiting. And recruiting is all about relationships. So I do think I'd be an indefatigable recruiter and use my name and get in front of the right people and use the fact that Oklahoma State would be the only program in the country to have a wrestling, basketball, football, baseball coach, all alums. Like, hey, there's a reason that we all come back, right? Because we think everybody else might think we're crazy, but we know something everybody else doesn't know. And that Stillwater's the best. It's awesome. And so I think I would understand setting narratives, using that in recruiting, using my my presence and name to get us off, you know, to get us running right away. And then, you know, like, look, I also think the fact that I'm not coaching anywhere now allows me to stay in contact with players that might want to transfer out. And that's part of college basketball. Now, look, there's plenty of other coaches that are, you know, currently texting Oklahoma State's players, Oklahoma State's recruits, because that's, again, part of the game. But I've had direct lines of communications with kids and been able to establish some relationships that are above board. But if I was to get the job, able to execute the possibility of taking them in immediately as a fifth year or a sit one, play two type of transfer.
Yeah, Doug, I have no doubts about your recruiting prowess and your connections with recruits and stuff. And I know the players you have kind of determines what style of play you have on offense and defense. I know that will change with you based on who you have. But just what are your core principles as far as offense and defense? Obviously, you play under Eddie Sutton. I'm sure some of his defensive principles carry over. But what is your general coaching outlook on offense and defense as far as basketball goes?
It's a great question. A lot of the attributes of Coach Sutton I believe in. The difference is I actually – like, look, one of the great things about I learned from Coach Sutton is when you go into a timeout and you can run a play, make sure you run a zone play – you have a zone play and a man play, right? But not everybody does that. And so I'm a man-to-man guy. But there's all different kinds of man-to-man, as you saw with Brad this year. And I frankly think one of the reasons they struggled in man-to-man at the end of the season was he was coaching something he didn't know. Like, he doesn't really know pack line, and he only knows, you know, get up in the lane and pressure. And once that didn't work, and I think a lot of that was, we talked about this last year, guys. I mean, if you pull the podcast, I think you remember I said, like, I want to pressure. I want to play fast, but there's certain personnel limitations. Like,
yeah.
Hey, let's be reasonable. Phil Forte is an awesome, awesome player. Like, dude, you can't have him guarding 35 feet from the basket. And frankly, you can't have Juwan playing the way he was playing because he got into foul trouble. And it doesn't. So anyway, my point is that, I'm a man-to-man guy. But I'm also a guy that, kind of like Bill Self, I'm willing to not guard somebody if I don't think they can score. I'm willing to come out of a timeout and be in a triangle and two for a possession, because who practices triangle and two offense? We did at Oklahoma State. But I thought that Coach Sutton was actually really far ahead of the curve in terms of his level of preparedness offensively for junk defenses, for zone defenses. What's weird about it was we did have a zone, but for the most part we were man, and we never capitalized on the fact that not everybody in basketball does that, you know? So I would have, you know, at my arsenal, we play some diamond in one, we play some triangle in two. We'd run a 1-3-1 at times. We'd press on made free throws. But for the most part, that ball goes in the bucket and we're going to pick you up when you cross half court. And depending upon who my point guard is at the time, you know, if you have Ava Red in there, like that ball goes in the bucket, I'm going to make that guy work 94 feet. And so my first core principle is, you know, you got to take somebody out of what they do best. And if a team is a team that turns the ball over side to side, you don't let them, but you take them out of what they want to do best. One of the things I learned from Kelvin Sampson is on made shots, and you'll see Oregon do that this weekend, Sweet 16. You go to a little 1-2-2, not to trap, but simply to slow people up, put them in the half court, make them run offense. But I want to play man-to-man. I want to force to the baseline. I want my point guard in you. I'm also reasonable, though, about how much you extend pressure with the way the game's officiated. Offensively, we want to sprint and transition, keeping everybody wide, and we're setting the transition ball screen just the way they did for Juwan. But within the half court, my half court offense is different than the pinwheel stuff that they were running. It's what I call a 3-and-2 motion, where you always have 3 on one side and 2 on the other. Some principles of triangle to it, but with a lot more ball screens. There's some principles of ball screen motion in it that Brad Stevens brought to college basketball that everybody runs. But I think there's a lot more freedom to it. And the idea is you always have a big on each side, but we don't want a big in the post. We want our bigs setting ball screens, and if they're a shooter, pop. If they're a big, they're rolling, and the weak side big is playing off of that. And the ball screens don't just come to the middle. They go to the baseline side as well. And and what you're teaching every day is just playing basketball within the framework of the offense, constantly relocating, moving the ball side to side, and try and attack. And if you have proper spacing, it makes it really difficult to guard.
Doug, Brad Underwood talked about this after the Michigan game. He sounded almost philosophically kind of beat down about how many threes Michigan hit. I'm curious about just your viewpoint on how the three-pointer has changed basketball in 2017 from when you played, and how that would affect you as a coach.
Well, I mean, look, it's changed college basketball. It changed the NBA, changed college basketball, and really I saw the change firsthand when I first started playing overseas. You know, when you go play in Europe, and all the European big guys can shoot.
Yeah.
And so, it's completely changed the spacing. We're also using different parts of the basketball court now than when I played. We use the corner. We kind of started to use that where you drive the baseline, throw to the corner.
Yeah, Glendon Alexander hit that shot for years in Stillwater.
Right. I mean, but it's not just a corner jump shot. It's driving the baseline, kicking to the weak side corner. It's the spacing of using all of the 94 by 50, not just, and look, again, this just kind of comes back to my offensive philosophy, which is when I played, almost all ball screens were set coming to the middle of the court. You know, you put your shooters away and you set them to the middle of the court. Now, they force you away from the middle of the court. And they force the ball screens down to the baseline. That's okay. We're going to set ball screens to go to the baseline and then have the proper rotations in place. So has the three-point line changed? Yeah. But you also – I thought they didn't – they just kept lining up. Like, look, here's my issue with how they defended Michigan. Michigan's really got it moving, okay? And John Beal has his very distinctive offense, which takes the big guy, puts him at the top of the key. It has some UCLA. It has some shuffle. I've broken it down before. It's an interesting offense. By my perspective, the mistake that they made was you can't allow them to turn the ball side to side. Once you allow that ball to switch sides of the court, now they're running half-court offense. And remember, Michigan's probably practiced how many times in a year? You know, you're talking about 150 times in a year. And every one of those practices, they're running that offense that you don't know, like the back of your hand. So don't let them run that offense. Take them out of it. So, I mean, like, look, guys, in summation, has the three-point shot changed things? Like, yeah. I mean, part of it is the way in which the game is officiated, it's really hard, especially at the NBA level, to post up. And so it's forced even the biggest of big guys to develop the skill of shooting. Analytics have told us that you're a more effective player shooting a three than you are scoring in a post-up shot, right? A post-up shot is like a, you know, 0.77 per possession, as opposed to the possible the points per possession when you're shooting three-point shots. So the NBA game has changed. The college basketball game has changed. It's all kind of vectored down from the European game. And I think you have to adjust accordingly. And really, John Beilein was kind of ahead of this curve. And remember, he came from a low major, mid-major level, Richmond and Canisius, and he developed the style and he used it at West Virginia.
Yeah.
And I think that it's caused people to completely change the way in which they coach defense, because how you rotate against the ball screen on the weak side creates openings. And so I'll give you a perfect example. Oklahoma State and Louisville had kind of the same problem. When you have a ball screen on your right side, you're guarding the basketball. A guy beats you to the baseline side, okay? And you have a shooter in that side's corner. Now how we play defense, you wouldn't come off of that shooter, right? You'd come off the weak side. Whoever the weak side guard is should be all the way over and help. And you want to make them pass the ball across the court, and then whoever was guarding the basketball, he should be sprinting to the weak side. But there's also kind of a European style is when you get beat in dribble penetration, the strong side defender can come off of his man, knowing that the pass is going to that strong side corner. And the man who was beaten, say that's Juwan, you know, and say, I don't know, Leighton's guarding the kid Wilson in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
Leighton comes all the way into the block to help take a charge, and Derek Walton can pass the ball out to the corner. Meanwhile, Juwan Evans is essentially switched or X'd out, and he's taken that direct line and run right to the corner. Like, those are some of the adjustments you can make. It's really hard when you're in an NCAA tournament to make adjustments on the fly. They did have the chance to prepare for a week, you know, or close to a week, but you know, you're kind of reconfiguring your rules. So one, that's the beauty of Beilein, and one of the reasons Beilein's better out of conference sometimes than in conference. Because in conference, a lot like the Princeton style, once you've prepared for it, you know, all right, it's Michigan. We know what we do. This is how we guard it every week. The second thing is, you know, I don't think it was a style of defense that he was truly accustomed to playing. To be candid with you, to playing pack line. And that was one of the reasons that there were some fissures in their defense.
Yeah. Something interesting that Mike Gundy has talked about a lot in football, especially at the beginning of his career, is just changing what you do to fit your personnel. Is that something that you think should be a lifelong philosophy for a coach, or is it just until you get your guys in there and then you just start recruiting to what you, to what you want to do?
Generally, you should always be pliable.
Yeah, right?
You should be a pragmatist. You should be like, all right, what do I have? Let's run something. Now, look, if you get a Wisconsin for a long time, they recruited to the swing offense.
Yeah,
and guys would redshirt or guys would sit early on. They'd learn the offense. I'm a pragmatist. I'm not a guy who this is our system and we're always going to be that system guy. Do I want athleticism? Yeah, I need some guys with some bounce. Do I want a stretch four? Yeah, but I would, you know, like, do I have a stretch four? Do I have an athletic four? Do I have bigs that demand to be on the floor? I mean, you know, I'm more pragmatic. And I think, you know, Coach Sutton evolved when I was there. He played Desmond Mason at the four,
yeah,
my first 2 years. In all candor, my junior year, he should have played Desmond some at the five and Glennon at the four. We played small ball that way. We only did it once the entire year against Texas. We came back and nearly won in a comeback, but we always tell them, hey, our five best players are our five guards. Play those guys. So I think you do your best to get your best players on the floor as long as you can, and then you find your system accordingly. But that's me. And that's also – I'm somebody who I have a diverse background in basketball. You know, Coach Sutton ran some motion, but we ran different offense every year. You know, when I was at Notre Dame, we ran what's called a two-side motion, or it could be called blocker mover. I'm not a fan of it, but I do think there's some virtues to it. And then when you play professionally, you're running sets almost, and then you're running kind of, you know, ball screen and go and all kinds of different spacing options and stuff. So you're just kind of playing basketball. I think a lot of times guys that are system guys, they play in the system, coach in the system, and that's the only system they know. Sometimes it's guys who didn't play and they learned the system and that's all kind of they know. But most of us who played, especially guys who played at a high level, like we don't have one thing that we want to do.
Yeah. You touched on this a little bit with Carson on Sunday, but you said Oklahoma State this year was just a sliver of what it could be, just a fraction of what Gallagher Iba could be, what the program could be. What do you think is the ceiling for that program? If the gold standard nationally is Duke, Kansas, Indiana, North Carolina, UCLA, where does Oklahoma State fall in terms of what its ceiling is on a national level?
The ceiling is the roof, isn't it? The roof. We learned from Michael Jordan. The ceiling's the roof. What's the ceiling was probably where we were when Coach Sutton had it in 04. You know, when you're in the Final Four.
Yeah.
And then the following year, when I think they lost in the Sweet 16. Like, look, I think you should, I think you should be competitive for an NCAA tournament spot every year. And I think once every 3 or 4 years, you should feel like you'd be disappointed if you weren't at least a second weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think you should be competing for league championships every couple of years. But you also have to keep in mind that whoever takes it over, whether it's me or somebody else, like, dude, you're going to be the third head coach in 3 years. The likelihood of sustained success, there's likely to be a dip. And, like, let's see what happens with Juwan. Let's see what happens. You could lose this entire recruiting class. There's a lot of things that could happen. But the ultimate ceiling is, like, yeah, you should be a – top 25 team. No reason because if that place is hopping, it should propel you to winning 85-90% of your games on an average year, right? And if you win 85% of your games, and then you win, you know, one or two neutrals, you win, you know, three or four roadies, like, you're good. You're in. You got a decent seed, and you give yourself a shot.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Last one. We'll get you out of here on this. And I know you, I don't know how much you can speak to this, but just how much have you talked to Mike Holder this week? How do you expect the week to play out in terms of how quickly OSU hires somebody and what your role in that is?
I have not spoken with Coach Holder. This is as of Monday at 2:30. I'm sure he has some of the same reservations he had last year. I do believe that some of the people who have spoken to him on my behalf have helped in some ways alleviate some of those reservations.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that the timing of this is different than it was last year.
Yeah.
So it creates a better possibility. I expect to speak to him sometime this week. And as I'll tell him, again, I don't know what anybody deserves. I hate the word deserves. Mm-hmm. Like, what do any of us deserve? But I do believe that to sit down face-to-face with whomever he is deciding with and give my view of, you know, the first 60 days, the first 6 months, first year, first 3 years, first 5 years, how I think that would go, what type of personnel I'd be bringing in as a staff, what type of personnel I'd be bringing in players-wise, who we want to keep, you know, who we're going to allow to transfer out. I mean, they're all hard discussions that you have behind closed doors. I would like that opportunity. I don't know if I earned it, but I would relish the opportunity in getting it. And I think that it's more probable than not that hopefully that will take place. And, you know, this thing has been, I've gotten some really good advice from some really smart people. And I think what happens is when you put yourself out there, you know, there's a couple of people who really want it to happen. They're like, man, I don't know, just emotionally extending myself is really hard. And, you know, my wife was a little bit that way because she really had her hopes up last year. And I said, you know, look, here's the thing. We're always going to love our school. We're always going to love the people that we associate with from our school. And I do if the timing isn't now, then I don't know when there is timing. I don't know. But I do feel like there's a little bit of divine intervention there. And as I've told people, hey, close your eyes and think of this as a possibility where we line up and I'm the coach and you look and there's Josh who coaches baseball and Coach Smith in wrestling and Gundy with his beautiful mullet there as well. And you're like, hey, they're all alums. And when you go to a parent, or you go to a mentor, and you say, look, I know you, I'm telling you a story about a university, but when all of these men turn down other opportunities, to stay at a place or to come to a place, that says something about the place and something about the people that are there. And I think it just all makes sense and fits. And when I said it was what Brad experienced or what Brad was able to do is a fraction of it, I mean it, because there still was the, God, is this thing real? And this probably stings a lot of people to where they're like, man, I was really in last year. Now I don't know, can I ever really?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I mean, honestly, it's like when you cheat on a woman. Right? Like, cheat on a woman, you can go to therapy. And you can go and say, honey, baby, I'll change. I'm never. But in the back of her mind, she's like, look, am I ever going to trust this guy ever again?
Right.
Right. That's very reasonable. And that's kind of where Oklahoma State fans are right now, where they're like, dude, can I trust? I can only tell you that how I've made it in this business is I'm somebody who always says what I'm thinking. And it's sometimes to my detriment. But it's from a place of honesty. And
yeah.
Usually a place of it. And so when I say I want it for the right reasons, I want to be a part of changing kids' lives, of making Gallagher Iowa what it was at the end of the season for the entirety of the season. I don't want a one and done in the NCAA tournament. I want a several and done, or who knows, maybe live the impossible dream of winning six. If you could hire Steve Kerr, would you do it? If you could hire Fred Hoiberg, would you do it? You hire Chris Mullin, would you do it? Right? So why wouldn't you afford me that opportunity because of all of the previously listed reasons?
Yeah. Well, it's certainly going to be interesting, and we wish you the best of luck. It's always been fun to talk about this stuff, and as a fellow alumni of Oklahoma State, it's always a pleasure. So good luck this week, and I hope everything works out the way you want it to.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, talk to you later, Doug. Okay, that was fun. I'm back. Obviously, Carson, not with us on the podcast. He didn't pass away or anything. Didn't die trying to do the 225 on the bench. But before we wrap up, we do need to hear from our good sponsor for the entire school year so far, Chris's University Spirit. Let's hear from them, and then I will come back and wrap it up. Chris's University Spirit on Campus Corner in Stillwater, Oklahoma is proud to be your one-stop cowboy shop since 1986 and proud sponsor of this podcast, Pistols Firing. They specialize in custom-printed Oklahoma State apparel and merchandise and pride themselves on their excellent customer service. They also offer a full line of custom Greek apparel and can even outfit your Little League team head-to-toe. They're located at the corner of 3rd and Knobloch on historic Campus Corner. You can follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And be sure to shop online at chrisuniversityspirit.com. Shop Stilly, shop Chris's University Spirit. Okay, I am back. Man, that ending was cool. You know, Doug has a lot of interesting and good things that he's selling, but he's playing his cards right. You know, he's playing the loyalty card, which is paramount at the moment. You know, Carson and I talked about this. You bring somebody in and he's a mid-major guy, he's a low major guy like Underwood, came from the Southland. What's the excitement level from the fan base there? You know, are they jacked up about bringing in, you know, the Middle Tennessee guy? Are they jacked up about bringing in, you know, the Florida Gulf Coast guy? Is that a thing that excites you when we just saw that, you know, those guys, Oklahoma State's a stepping stone job for a lot of people. I don't think it is for Gottlieb. I don't think it necessarily should be, but it is, especially when somebody like Mike Holder has shown that he might not pay on a national level what some other schools will pay. So The idea of being loyal to your school, and also I think even more importantly, like just the thing he was talking about with having four coaches, John Smith, Mike Gundy, Josh Holliday, and presumably Gottlieb, being from Oklahoma State, that's a real thing. And I think it is sort of a it's a way to make Oklahoma State great at those sports that, in some ways, let me put it this way. Oklahoma State is not going to be a national powerhouse across the board in all sports if you just play it straight up the way that other schools do it. They're just not. You're competing with Texas and OU and then nationally with all these other schools. You can't make traditional hires. You know, we've seen that with Gundy. Here's the thing. Mike Holder has been, people criticize him. He's been great at his job. He has. Like, he's built Boone Pickens Stadium. He got that built. He got Carson Creek done. Look at the, and I was talking to Carson about this. Look at the how good the programs he has kind of presided over are doing. Look at football, top 15 nationally. Look at wrestling, you know, obviously best, you know, top three program in the country. Look at the non-revenue sports. Look how good baseball is right now. Look at the tennis teams. Look at track and field. Like, the Oklahoma State is thriving right now, and we can talk about him being abrasive and being a bad leader, but it's hard to argue with the results. Now, basketball is the outlier there. Like, they're not been great, but he's got an opportunity now to make a really what I think would be just a crazy, fun, awesome, exciting, thrilling hire in Doug Gottlieb. Now, is he going to do it? I don't know. Probably not. Maybe not. But he might. And I can't imagine anything more fun than watching Doug Gottlieb coaching a rocking sellout Gallagher Iba Arena to in the Big 12. It would just be personally a little bit of a thrill, but also just as an OSU fan, it would be pretty neat. So we'll see what happens. We'll continue to have coverage on the blog. Thomas Fleming wrote a great post today about four coaches that didn't have previous experience that have succeeded. Kyle Boone has got Underwood quotes from Illinois. I'm writing a little bit about Underwood's contract and how that looks for Oklahoma State. Like I said, Carson and I did a podcast earlier today, kind of putting to bed the Underwood era, even though I'm sure we'll talk about it for the next 3 months. And I hope you guys enjoyed having Doug Gottlieb on. He was a busy man today, and so we were thankful for his time, as always, as we are for all of our guests. And if you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed listening to it, go rate us on iTunes, give us 4 or 5 stars or 1 star if you're not pleased with the product, but leave comments. That's always helpful. As I've said in the past, we are going to, at some point between basketball and football, we are going to have people start donating. You know, this has been a blog that has hopefully been enjoyable for a lot of people over a long period of time. And I think one of our revenue streams going forward is going to have to be just donations from people who have enjoyed it and want it to continue to thrive in the future. So that'll be coming. I promise we have t-shirts coming and other gear. Chris Knox is working on that right now. He's doing an incredible job. So that'll be up at some point between now and football season. Both of those things are coming. And as always, appreciate your support. Just people listening to this and people reading on the blog. It's a ton of fun to produce. I've loved seeing other guys grow in their writing and their podcasting and different things like that. It's been just a joy from my end to watch Kyle Cox, Kyle Boone, all the Kyles, Sam Aldrich, Thomas Fleming, all of our guys, Hayden Barber, our beat reporter, just do really good work. So check them out, check out the blog, and we will be back later in the week.